Welcome to Check Out This Book. I'm Josefa Salinas, your host.
Well, if you've been following me for the past couple of decades here in radio, you know that this girl is a beer lover. I will have a cold cerveza when I am out doing my yard work after a great workout, and then sometimes just to end a day. Yes, I'm the one that will grab the bottle of beer, and I love it straight out of the bottle. I'm from the Midwest. Come on. We grew up on beer. We were drinking beer, you know, I won't even say what age we were drinking beer at, but let's just say I've been drinking beer for a long time. So when I saw this book come out again, it's the second edition, The Beer Bible, the most comprehensive guide to the world of beer. Everything you need to know about what to drink, where, oh, I can give you some tips on that one, when and why. Why? Because beer tastes great. And Jeff Allworth is with us this morning. Hey, Jeff, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it is so good to have you here. And I love this book because my brothers are, you know, beer drinkers. We're from the Midwest. We drink beer. And they're going to, last time this book came out, I gave it as gift. And this will be in the holiday gift list for me again to give out because it's so incredible. Talk to me about this ultimate guide and why you did it.
Well, the original book was actually the publisher's idea. They had another book called The Wine Bible, and they thought they would have a companion piece about beer, and I was fortunate enough to be selected to write that. The second edition I wrote because, that remarkably, beer changed quite a bit in the last several years. I hadn't anticipated that. I tried to write the book so that it would be kind of evergreen. You know, you figure beer doesn't change that much, and I wanted people to use it as a reference for as long as they wanted to. But beer changed so much that it kind of demanded that I write another version of this and update it. So that's why I decided to do this second edition.
So talk to me about how beer has changed. I know that there's so many different kinds of beer. Beer used to be, you saw all the traditional names, but now you go in there and, oh my gosh, there are like all these beer names that I've never heard of and things people are mixing beer with. And I'm just like, what? You put what in the beer? So talk to me about how beer has changed.
Yeah, what you're describing is exactly why I wanted to write the second edition. There are 9,000 breweries in the United States right now. I think when I wrote the first edition, there were probably about 4,000. So it's really exploded. And all those different breweries are trying different things. But what they're mainly working with in the United States is people, the word IPA, people probably know if they're beer drinkers. It's the hoppy style of American ale that we make here. And it has gone through this radical shift since brewers first started making in the 1990s. It's made with very expressive American hops that often taste very fruity. Sometimes brewers will put fruit in it, like you mentioned, to accentuate that quality. And they're brewing with these new hops in a way that nobody in the 1,000 years of humans have been making beer with hops. They've never brewed the way that Americans brew to get these hops to really express themselves. And it's been a radical change in the way we think about beer and brew beer, and it's affected brewing across the world. Now, if you go to London or Munich, you will find local brewers making American IPAs. So it because of all that change, I felt like it, as the one of the main references in the English language, when people turn to that chapter, they needed to have the up-to-date information because it's the most important style being made right now. So that's why I wanted to do a second edition.
So real quick, for people that don't know, because there's not anybody that's going to admit it out loud, tell me what IPA stands for.
It stands for India Pale Ale, which is mystifying for most people because it doesn't have apparently much to do with India. And the truth is, it didn't have much to do with India when it was first brewed in the 1700s in England. It was brewed by the English who shipped it to the colonies in England, but they shipped it to themselves. So it was the people who were managing the colonies in India who drank that beer. And even that wasn't really the story. It was kind of a marketing gimmick. The English sold it locally in England as this colonial product. And they talked about how it was prepared for the Indian market. And then people who were kind of the local folks who were really into what was coming back from the colonies during this great period of empire in England were drinking the beer because they thought it had this kind of, you know, exotic quality. Well, the beer fell out of style for, you know, 150 years, and it wasn't really brewed much, even in England, before Americans discovered it. They first romantically, you know, fell in love with it the same way that the English people did. But then they started brewing it themselves in different ways, not the ways the English did, and kind of tweaked it. And then we had these local hops. So it started to taste different because we had different flavored hops, and then it mutated into this new thing. And in fact, if you go to other places in the world, they don't even call it IPA. They usually call it IPA, which is even further removed from India. So it's just kind of become IPA in most of the parts of the world.
So just to clarify for the audience, IPA, does that stand for one particular type of beer or a general category of beers?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's become a general category of beers. And if you go to the grocery store and look at the shelves, you'll see beers that have the letters IPA on them. And if you look at the label and try to figure out what connects them, it can be a little bit difficult. Some are, you know, as low as 4.5% alcohol, and some are as strong as, you know, more than 10%. They may be very hazy and cloudy. They may be crystal clear. They may be darker. They may be lighter. So it really refers to the flavor and aroma of hops, which express themselves in these beers as usually as fruitiness. So tropical fruit is pretty common, or citrus fruit. And that when people see that word, that's the quality they're looking for.
Aha. Uh-huh. So, and I know there's a whole bunch of people out in the audience going, oh, thank God she asked that question, because I didn't want to ask anybody, let them know that I didn't know what an IPA is. So now we know. So let's talk about how American beer has influenced beers around the world.
Yeah, this IPA phenomenon that started here in the United States. Beer is a product of culture. I should back up and say this. And it's much like cuisine. So when you think about France and Germany, which are right next to each other and have the same climate and grow the same kind of vegetables, their cuisines are radically different. And that's because of the way chefs think about food and the way that people locally eat food. It's the same thing with beer. It's a product of process and culture, and you can make it in a lot of different ways, even using the same ingredients. And Americans kind of figured out a new way to make IPAs to really draw out the flavor and aroma of these fruity hops. And brewers elsewhere looked at that and said, hey, that's interesting. Wonder what we could do with that same technique. And so sometimes they make their own versions of IPAs, and sometimes they use the techniques that Americans developed in other styles of beer to make them pop a little bit more with those flavors and aromas of hops. So it's international now.
Well, my birthday is this month, and I already got such an interesting gift that I had never seen before, and I want to know if you know anything about this. It's the Sam Adams Utopia.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I'm going to open it on my birthday. Talk to me about that. And you talk about a unique beer.
That's right. Beer is wildly diverse. It can be very weak, or it can be very strong, like the one that you're talking about. It is a process. So I think it's over 20%, maybe 25%, something like that. It's a very strong beer. And it's impossible to make that beer through natural fermentation that strong. When the yeast begins to digest malt, it produces alcohol, but it can only produce it to a certain point. And back in the 19th century, there was a brewery in Germany that had an accident, and they discovered a way to make stronger beer through this accident. They left a keg of beer outside, and it froze, and they brought it into the brewery, and they poured the beer out of it, but a lot of it was frozen, and the part that froze was just the water, leaving the concentrated alcohol behind. And it's called Eisbach, the original. They called it Eisbach because part of it was frozen, the ice. And that technique is fairly obscure, but it's still around, and it's the one that Sam Adams uses to make that a very strong, rich beer that you have.
Yeah, 30 years it takes to make each batch. But it only comes out every 2 years. Jeff, thank you so much for being with us. Quickly, social media where people can find more about the Beer Bible and you.
Oh, thank you. My handle on Twitter is @BeerVana. You can find me by my name, Jeff.Allworth, on Instagram. And if you go on the web, my blog is BeerVana blog, and there's a bunch of information about my books and my writing there.
Well, it has been a delight talking with you. And if you write more about beer, you know you got a home right here.
Thank you so much. It was wonderful.
Thanks for being with us on Check Out This Book. Every week we'll be adding more interviews, but browse around. There's plenty here to review.